At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
In a world that ever so changing of digital footprints, what a best way to have a dialogue and conversation with an expert in digital arena and technology, agnostic digital delivery, a subject matter expert and independent ERP deliverables, obviously focusing so much on human capital, business intelligence, supply chain, and so much more. Everything the global business, even not local one, needs to pay attention to. Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lundberg, the World Messenger, and I'm inviting you for another epic episode of Legacy Leader Show. Today, I have a very special guest that can really highlight in everything that I just mentioned. How is technology shifting and changing, specifically in digital world? What best way to have expert here with us that can share with us an independent consulting group, third stage consulting group, that are able to not only share with us what's going on the global screen, but also what's going on in our own community. Zooming here, neck and woods of Colorado. Without further ado, let me introduce you to Eric Kimberling. Eric, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Isabella?
I'm doing fantastic. It's so great to actually find such a great, not only expertise, but someone who also share passion and understands dynamics of global arena that is right now in 2024 shaping things on such a rapid scale. So Eric, before we get further into how you invested the last 25 plus years and became such a independent, globally recognized subject matter expert in arena that we just mentioned, and so much more. Could you please tell us, how did you get into technology in first place?
Well, I'd love to say that I had this grand, brilliant master plan, but I did not. I accidentally stumbled into technology consulting when I was getting my master's degree here at University of Denver. Here, you and I are both based in the Denver area. In fact, we live very close to one another. We're a mile apart, I think. It's not very far, so it's a very small world. But when I was here at University of Denver getting my master's in business administration, there was a CIO at a local manufacturing company that also went to University of Denver, same school of business, and he was wanting to hire a graduate student to come in and help him re-engineer some of his business processes. And I thought that sounded pretty fun. So I went in and I got to learn all about supply chain management and manufacturing processes and shop floor processes. And he was having me help him do that from the context of a ERP implementation. The company was implementing Oracle at the time. And so he wanted someone to work alongside the consultants to the Oracle consultants to define what the future state business processes were going to be and really help analyze and re-engineer the processes. So I enjoyed that project. I got to know a little bit about consulting. And then when I was recruiting and interviewing for jobs, the consulting firms were very interested in the fact that I had that 1 year of experience with that company. And so I took a job with Price Waterhouse. They gave me an offer coming out of graduate school. And then I went to work at Price Waterhouse Coopers here in Denver, and they immediately sent me to SAP training. So I learned SAP, got certified, but I didn't want to go become an SAP consultant. I wanted to be a business process or a strategy consultant. And so I was kicking and screaming and trying to get out of it, but they basically said, look, you're brand new at the company. You don't really have a say. You are getting certified in SAP. So I was forced against my will in many ways to go get certified in SAP. I didn't want to, but I'm really glad I did. I'm glad I had that partner that I worked for that said, you need this experience. You need to learn technology. And I just didn't think of myself as a technologist at the time. And keep in mind, this is, you know, the late 90s, when you think of technology back in the late 90s, it was all about e-commerce and dot-coms and some of the really cool new technologies at the time. It wasn't, you know, ERP stuff wasn't cool back then, and cloud stuff wasn't even a thing yet. So I didn't want to do any of that. That was for the techies to do, not for me. So, but it took me probably 2 or 3 years of doing this before I realized, oh, you know, there is strategy in technology, and there needs to be technology in strategy. And so if I could know both, if I could be good at strategy, if I could be good at operations and be good at technology, that might be a powerful combination. So that's how I got from resisting the idea of being a technology consultant to now loving it and couldn't imagine doing anything differently now. So I'm glad it worked out that way.
What a brilliant journey. Thank you for sharing that with us. And it's very interesting. We know a lot of times we don't want to do something, but yet turns out was one of the biggest components to success, right? That hidden trifecta that Third Stage Consulting Group is having and such a strong global presence. But for everybody watching and listening, specifically, since we have such a global leadership audience here paying attention, what's going on, ERP itself, it's been more complex than ever before. You mentioned cloud, you mentioned additional digital footprints and technologies that are now available. Now we're throwing AI, machine learning, automation, and so much more. So do you mind walking us through what are you, trends do you see on global scale and definitely specifically for US market?
Well, I think up until a year and a half ago, the biggest trend was probably cloud. You know, all these different software vendors moving their old on-premise offerings to the cloud. And that still is a trend, but it's been largely overshadowed by artificial intelligence. It's interesting when I go to different industry conferences, whether it's a software vendors conference or any other sort of industry technology conference, AI is just by far, hands down, just the number one focus. I mean, everyone's talking about AI. Software vendors are trying really hard to build AI capabilities into their solutions and trying to figure out how AI can enhance and improve their solution offerings. And, you know, certainly the advent of ChatGPT at the beginning of 2023 is about just over a year ago when ChatGPT really took the world by storm. I think that's created a consumer level understanding of what AI is, or at least what on the surface AI could do to automate jobs and automate, you know, some more tedious functions. So it's an really interesting time in my opinion, because most technologies start off with large consumer adoption, and then it takes a few years for the enterprise technology space to catch up. But in the case of ChatGPT and AI, it's sort of like been in parallel. While consumers are figuring out ChatGPT and in many cases becoming enamored with AI and ChatGPT, at the same time, the enterprise tech vendors are trying to figure out how do we keep up, you know, how do we add AI capabilities to our system. So I think that's the biggest trend we're seeing is AI. But a second, you know, a distant second trend would be the continuation of the movement to the cloud.
I totally agree with that. And I've also seen that it's such a huge gaps and you do something extremely well. Everyone, first of all, kudos to you. You have such every year created and generated very strong reports, as well as obviously strong presence in digitally with great videos and content that always reflects and gives snippets of timely relevant information. And why I'm bringing this up, you know, you identify something very important that I also find through different analytics and statistics on my own, which I would like you, if you don't mind, also share a little bit. What are we also seeing simultaneously happening? I'm seeing huge gaps in leadership skill set, not only to lead in current time, let alone be positioned for leading in the future with all the vast technology that is coming up, right? And then you see something that complements that in order for organizations not only to be surviving, but truly thriving.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, technology is changing so quickly that it can be hard for leaders to understand all the technologies that are out there and understand all the different ways that technology could help improve their business. I guess the good news in all of this is that I would say strong technology leadership has very little to do with the technology itself. It has more to do with the soft side of leadership. And I think with the advent of these, I don't want to call them cold technologies, but these impersonal, potentially threatening technologies like AI that might automate jobs, it might take away jobs, it's going to disrupt our lives in many ways. There's sort of like a harsh reality, you know, with where technology is headed. But then you shift gears and you look at the positive side. The positive side is that if you can be a strong leader and really understand how to guide an organization through some of these uncertainties and these technological advances, that's going to become even more of a high value commodity going forward, because we're so focused on and enamored on technology on one hand. So those that can bridge the gap between technology and people, I think those are the people that are really going to succeed and thrive in the future.
That is a very good point, because we've seen a lot of times a panic, right? Because it's fear unknown, and then also resistance to change, just because, again, we're holding sometimes for what's familiar, even though the change might be so much better. And already, obviously, you position so well independently, individually, but also how you lead your company and enterprise as well as your clients. So do you mind sharing some of the success stories or elements that really help you to always kind of be 2-3 steps ahead and be able to really anticipate that, not only through the digital footprint that is changing and transformation that is occurring, but also the way you lead and help to support others?
Yeah, I think it's become more important than ever for me, and I think for other leaders in the technology space, to really have open ears and open minds and ask a lot of questions and really seek to understand, because the way I learned technology back in the late 90s is totally different than the way technology is today. And if I would have sort of hardened my ways and said, okay, I'm experienced now, I understand technology the way it was 10 or 20 years ago, I would be obsolete today. And so you have to sort of be willing to let go of the way you learned technology and things in the past. Although you have to also recognize that there are some lessons that are transcend technology trends and things of that nature, especially as it relates to leadership and change management and some of the softer side of things. But as it relates to technology change, you know, for me, it's just been a lot of, you know, getting to know people, learning from other people. And that's why, like you, I like to have, I love having a podcast, because it's a forum for me to learn. You know, I can get people on the show, like you're going to be on my podcast. I'm going to ask you questions. I guarantee I'm going to learn a ton of stuff by talking to you. And so by constantly meeting people, asking questions, understanding different perspectives, I think that's probably the most important skill set right now, is to be able to ask and listen.
I love that. Lifelong learners, right? And in pivoting and setting up. But looking from the, obviously from that thought leadership perspective and lens that you're so good equipped with, and now digital transformation, where that intersect is right now, what do we need to do to position better and to embrace that? Because obviously transformation, as you mentioned, it's not only just because of tools that's available and rapid learning and growth, but also global landscape and economy shifting and changing, appetite for different things is changing, and as well economy is shifting and changing. And with that in mind, will be great to hear some of those great success stories that you have that really can put in perspective for others what's possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, first I'd say that, you know, the first lesson I have from having worked with so many companies in their digital transformations is that, you know, that every organization has to define what digital transformation means to them. And it's not going to look the same across different companies. And the problem with today's technology industry is that you have a whole ecosystem of technology providers that are trying to convince you that their technology is a silver bullet, or that if you just invest more in their technology, they're going to solve all your problems for you, or that if you don't invest in an entirely new technology stack, then you're falling behind and you're going to fail. So they have this sort of fear-based approach to selling and marketing their products. But at the end of the day, you know, as digital transformation leaders, we have to back up and say, let's define what makes sense for us. You know, what are we trying to be as an organization? Who are we today and what are we trying to be in the future? How much risk and change are we really willing to take? And if it's more incremental, slow-paced change, that's okay. That's not a bad thing. But yet we're conditioned to believe that if you don't go all in on new technologies and just invest in a ton of stuff, then you're falling behind and you're not future-proofed. So, you know, you get terms like future-proof. If you want to be future-proofed, you better buy a bunch of technology. That's very misleading at best. And so I think that it's important for leaders to say, this is who we are. This is what we're doing. This is the direction we're going. And now let's figure out what technology selectively fit into this scenario that we're trying to map out. And I'd say, back to your question about success stories, I mean, the strongest leaders and the most effective leaders and the most effective digital transformations I've ever seen are the ones where the leadership knows what they want. You know, they don't have all the answers, but they know this is what's best for our company. And the software vendor might be offering these different solutions, these different bells and whistles, but that's irrelevant to what we're trying to accomplish. We're going to focus on what it is we want. And, you know, and I think too many leaders are passive. You know, they just defer to the technology experts and say, well, they think, you know, the technologists are saying that we should invest in A, B, and C, but A, B, and C technologies may not make sense. You have to do what's right for you. And so, you know, just having that clarity of vision, a clear understanding of who you are and where you're headed, and, you know, just the confidence in that, I think, in the willingness to roll up your sleeves and take ownership of the digital transformation. Those to me are the things that put digital transformation leaders at the top of the, you know, top of the pyramid or the cream of the crop in terms of the most successful ones.
That is brilliant because, yeah, I feel like never as high demand of the leadership in terms of their own skill sets and knowledge, but also, as you said, opportunity to truly demonstrate where organization is headed and able to lead people. It's crucial more than ever. And our team starts a why, right? Where we're headed and why. So when we look at, obviously, from enterprise resource planning that we mentioned earlier and also supply chain management, I'm seeing the supply chain management has never been as much disrupted at the current times. And it's quite scary for a lot of companies. Specifically, both of us have a lot of experience working not only with Fortune 500, but also disruptors, right? The medium-sized companies that really grew legs very quickly. But right now, as we're seeing just how is everything geopolitically, geoeconomically changing around, do you mind shed some light on supply chain just because we see real concerns, how it's not only just supply of food, but also necessities and medical aid or just in general, different trades are being done. And what are your thoughts, how we should position and anticipate what's going to happen in future, specifically when we see inflation, when we see delays, the certain products are not any more longer available, we're seeking, looking for alternatives.
Right. Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, you know, we have to back up and look at history here a little bit and say that, you know, today's supply chain as it was up until 2020 was built for a very stable society, a very stable supply chain, a stable global supply chain. And the supply chain as we knew it up until 2020 was really, it sort of evolved in the 1980s and 1990s. It seems like that's when it really materialized into globalization and offshoring and looking at global supply chains. I mean, before that, there wasn't a ton of that happening at scale as it was starting in the 1980s into the 1990s, certainly the early 2000s as well. But what happened in 2020 was that it exposed the vulnerabilities of that supply chain globally as we knew it, because we built, you know, all this in the supply chain industry that were somehow touching it. We sort of built it for that stable environment where we know that a product is going to sit on the water on a container coming over the ocean, and it's going to take 6 weeks to get to where we need it to go. And that's just the way it is. And you plan ahead for it, and you know that you're getting a lower cost, but it's going to take you a little longer to get the product, but you plan for it, and everything, you know, typically works smoothly. It's not easy, it's not perfect, but generally things work smoothly. But what happens when there's a major, you know, pandemic like COVID, or a major geopolitical disruption like the wars that we're experiencing right now? Those things disrupt that global supply chain in the way it was built pre-2020. And so what we have to do now is rethink the supply chain strategies we have and look at how do we manage risk? You know, how do we diversify the vendors that we're relying on? You know, a lot of companies are still solely dependent on one core critical component that they can only get from one supplier. They only have one supplier available to get it from. Those companies are at risk, and those are the same companies that are running into stockouts and things of that nature. So what you have to do is really look at how do we diversify and hedge our risk in our supply chain, and also how do we find the right balance between low cost and timely delivery? I think for too long, the supply chain globally was built around this concept of where can we get the lowest cost components or raw materials. And it's okay if it takes 6 weeks for us to get it because it's low cost. But now organizations are realizing that maybe that's actually costing us more to have to wait 6 weeks for something, or not being able to plan that far ahead accurately. Yes. To where it might make more sense to onshore some of that supply to where, yep, we're paying more, but we know we can get the stuff faster. We can respond to changing customer demand faster. For some organizations, that's actually the low cost, high value supply chain. But that's not how supply chains were generally built. So I think those are some of the things you've got to think about is just how does the supply chain look in the future, and how do we need to improve and transform the supply chain that we have that we're managing?
Wow, what a such an amazing magnitude of change, right? So on all levels, when we think about it in reality, and the question is, what is our threshold and capacity to handle that? And then also how well we are positioned and versed in that. And it seems like a lot of organizations are really looking more one-stop shop by dealing with the partners and organizations that can truly do multifold in terms of not only services, obviously, but ongoing support, right? Because we're seeing so many things that are affecting major players in the market, and of course then smaller enterprises as well. So do you mind sharing just how you are navigating so effectively for everybody that is not familiar with Third Stage Consulting Group, obviously, with what you offer, how you're creating not only that trifecta earlier we're mentioning about, but just also helping clients from all of those different stages and creating such a strong ripple effect?
Sure. Well, you know, first of all, it starts with our business model and our values as a company, where you mentioned the word independent and technology agnostic, and that's what we are. We are not affiliated with any software solutions, which to some people that aren't really familiar with how the industry works, that may not sound like that big of a deal, but it is a big deal because so many consultants, if not an overwhelming majority, I'd say 95% or more of consultants and consulting firms in the industry are somehow affiliated with a software vendor. And the reason for that is because a couple of things. One is it allows them to build at scale a focused practice area that focuses just on one technology. Secondly, and maybe even more importantly, it's another revenue stream for consulting firms to make money off of software solutions, especially now with cloud and ongoing subscription models that go into perpetuity. Consultants can make a lot of money just by recommending a certain product that they get a percentage cut of that investment. And so those are the reasons why the industry was built around a whole ecosystem of consultants that are essentially biased and acting in their own self-interest. So when we started Third Stage, the idea was, let's not do that. It's going to be a little bit harder in the short term, but let's only get paid by clients. So clients are the only ones that pay us. We don't care what technologies they do or don't use. All we care about is making sure we understand their business and that we recommend and help them implement technologies that are going to be more successful for them. And so that's really the key for us. It gives us a lot of, in a lot of ways, it sort of untethers us, or it unties our hands. You know, we can look at different technologies and be more creative and more open-minded and more client-focused in ways that most consultants can't, because their hands are tied by the software vendors they represent. They have to recommend certain products in most cases, or they have to focus on implementing just certain products because that's their lane. And so we've sort of said, we don't want to be in just one lane. We want to just help clients do and take the journey in whatever lane they want to be in, and we can help them navigate that.
I love that. And I want to highlight how important that is more than ever, actually, in today's business environment, where we really need to look at more specialized and customized offerings. And where we're also seeing such a need, as you mentioned, to look at really what's really most important and adjust that accordingly, right? Otherwise, when we have specific approach to it, it's a lot of sometimes overlaps also, which also they are not necessarily the best cost-effective ways to do something. And then you're tied to restrictions, as you mentioned. With that in mind, looking just what's going on in C-suite right now and how much is disruption just alone with CTOs and CIOs and CISOs, let alone rest of the C-suite, we also see a lot of competition, right? It's like, where do we invest the money? Where do we prioritize things? And it's just so important to be able to look at and address everybody's needs and question from that perspective. Any thoughts from how you handle that, or any thoughts, what you're seeing happening currently as well?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty within C-suites, and in back to your question earlier about technological change, there's a lot to keep up with. It's hard to stay focused. Excuse me. And so I think what the effective leaders need to do is not get too caught up or in or worried about technology at the expense of forgetting the fundamentals and really focusing on, you know, what is the strategy of the organization? How do we support that strategy? How do we get people mobilized to support the changes, and how do we paint the vision for the organization, all that good stuff. So I think that's, to me, the sort of guiding light that allows effective leaders to stay grounded and not get too caught up in trying to keep up with every single technological advance and trend. And it's great to learn. I mean, don't get me wrong. You keep up with it all you want, but that's not what's going to make you successful, because you know more about technological trends than someone else. It's going to be because you're a better leader and you understand business better and you know how to bridge the gap between business and technology and people. So that'd be my advice for people in the C-suite nowadays.
Brilliant. On that note, obviously accomplished so much and you continue gearing up and doing some great stuff, obviously having company established in major three different markets, or four actually. But what I wanted to really ask is, what's left in the bucket to do, Eric, for you in this coming year?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, we have, we've had the fortune of being a company with the international reach, but there's a lot more growth throughout the world that we could be pursuing, not only here in North America where we're based, but throughout the world. And so I think there's a strong demand for independent tech agnostic trusted advisors that can help clients through their technology initiatives. And so it's also not only a unique industry, but of the competitors we have, it's highly fragmented. So there's a lot of very small, smaller competitors, that are creating one or two or five woman shops or man shops that are, that we compete with. So there's a lot of opportunity for us to grow, maybe consolidate, maybe acquire. Those are all things we're considering, but we're aggressive in our growth plans and look forward to seeing where we can go and to create more opportunities for our team and for our company. And more importantly, for our clients, of course.
Of course. I love that, because it's not only just obviously thriving in growth, but finding that opportunity to sustain it, which I think it's a forefront for so many companies right now. Sustainability is a major, major challenge. The growth is for some being on rapid scale, some of them it kind of even or very slow or maybe a little bit under of projected expectations. But one of the biggest concerns that I'm seeing is sustainability. What are your thoughts on that, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, I mean, I was in Europe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I was working with a software company that we partner with. We partner with a technology provider that provides us tools to use in our consulting. We don't partner with the companies we might recommend to clients. And so this particular partner that we were working with was talking a lot about ESG and how in Europe, it's sort of a mandate, regulatory or government-wise. So they have no choice but to start measuring and tracking their ESG initiatives and the impact on the environment and that sort of thing. So it's a big deal, especially in Europe, but I think that's something that's probably going to spread to the rest of the world. I know here in the Americas or in the US, we think about it. For a lot of us, it's important, but it's not at the same scale as it is in Europe. And I think it's just a matter of time until, the rest of the world catches up. So whether you like it or not, it's just one of those things that that's where the world is headed right now.
Great. And on that note, obviously, you are leading and already living your legacy in so many ways, and just trajectory of how much impact and amazing results you were able to create, not only in business, but also with businesses and people. Obviously, your legacy, it's already been predefined in so many ways. But I'm curious, what would you like to be known and remembered for now in this chapter of your life where you already accomplished so much, but yet it desired to do more?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that. And thank you for saying that about the legacy. And it's a great word. It's a great name for this podcast and for your organization, because I think that's deep down what we all want, is to leave some sort of legacy and impact and fingerprint on the world, behind us. I think a couple things. One is that, part of the reason why I love owning a business so much, especially one that's growing and is starting to, get some pretty good scale behind it, is that it becomes something bigger than me or any one other person on the team. So it sort of becomes its own living thing. And so that, to me, is pretty cool to think that I could go away and retire tomorrow if I wanted or whatever, and that company would continue on and be successful. And that's really what I want, is to create something that can outlive me and last longer than I will. But I also think, part of what I really am finding that I enjoy as I get older is really just trying to teach and lead and mentor even people that don't hire us as clients or people that don't ever work for us. there is sort of that part of your ego that gets fed that says, hey, I'm helping people, or people like watching my videos, or people like learning from me. And I get emails quite often about, hey, thank you for, you know, putting out the videos you do. Please don't stop, or please keep putting videos out. I think people are afraid that I'm just going to one day decide I'm not going to do it anymore, but which won't, I don't see that ever happening, but as long as I'm here. But yeah, so that, I think that part is pretty cool as well. And then of course, you know, you want to leave a good example for your kids and give them something to kind of learn from and take with them and hopefully build on and be even better than I was. So there's a lot of different ways I think about that, especially as you get older, I think it becomes more important.
That's wonderful. And I love what you just mentioned in this example, because one of the ways I always highlight you is like, well, it's very important for what we're finding and what I found statistically when leaders are visible and being so visible as you are, having not only podcasts, but videos and opinion and statement and articles and truly keeping up forefront of everything that is going on. I wish the more leaders do that, because not only helps with education, but helps to already get to know you. It helps so much also to be ready and willing and available, not only to work or partner or whatever it might be, because that you build such a strong, phenomenal trust. So for everybody watching and listening, where they can get all that wonderful information. I know you have a YouTube channel, you have so many different great resources, but where they can get hands-on if they did not get a chance to experience you yet?
Sure. I guess the first place to start would be to go to, if you go to erickkimberling.com, that has my company's website on there. It has all my social media connections. It has my YouTube channel on there, my podcast, everything you can get to from erickkimberling.com. My company's name is Third Stage Consulting Group. You can also go there if you like. It's thirdstage-consulting.com. But either of those websites, if you start with erickkimberling.com, it has everything, you know, that's sort of like a portal to everything that I'm involved with, including my company and podcast videos, all that stuff.
Fantastic. And in closing, Eric, with all of those listeners that are watching and contemplating, and also specifically leaders that don't know where to start, it's one last piece of advice that you want to give them to set them up for success for 2024?
Yeah, I'd say just focus on who you are as an organization and where you're headed, and define a strategy and plan that aligns with that. It's more important that you get the alignment and the, you know, the strategy that aligns with your overall business direction. That's more important than making sure you have the right strategy. You don't have to be right. You just have to be consistent with who you are. And if you do that, then it just creates a lot of tailwinds, and it converts a lot of headwinds into tailwinds. So you sort of grease the wheels of the machine, you know, of change by doing that. So I think, you know, I wouldn't focus so much on perfection, or, you know, choosing the perfect technology stack, or, you know, defining your processes perfectly or anything like that. I mean, it's important stuff, but it's not nearly as important as just making sure you're in sync as a team with your strategy, the execution, and all that stuff.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.